Diabetes Insights, Breakthroughs and Innovators. The EASD TV podcast from the annual meeting of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes.
Hello, you're watching EASD TV. My name's Vivian Parry, and today we are going to be talking partnerships. And we're talking about partnerships, particularly between academia and pharma. And with me to discuss this are a range of people from pharma. Melissa Thompson, I'm going to say it from Lilly, but I ask you what your title is.
I'm a vice president in Lilly Research Laboratories focused on diabetes, obesity, and complications research.
Thank you. And Elizabeth Niemöller from Sanofi, what's your title?
My title is therapeutic area head for R&D development diabetes.
Fabulous. Finally, we have our academic representative from the Helmholtz. And Michele Sulemena, would you like to introduce yourself and your and what you do in academia?
So I direct the Paul Anger Institute in Dresden, which is a satellite institute at the Helmholtz Center in Munich. And at the same time, I'm professor of molecular diabetology at the Technical University in Dresden. And we work on the beta cells, the cells that make insulin.
Now, Michele, there's often been a kind of reluctance to get involved in partnerships with pharma. Do you feel, particularly as the distinction between pharma and academia becomes ever more fuzzy, do you think that that's changing?
Yeah, I do believe that there's been a huge change, a shift in culture. In the 90s, collaboration was regarded something that people in academia should not engage. Over time, this has, changed, and I think for the better. I've been part of a number of large initiatives involving both academia and industry, and I think that has been, some of the most rewarding experience in my professional career, to learn from each other. Of course, there are bumps. Sometimes there's different cultures, to some extent, which are understandable. But I think it's a way to go. And I think I would hope there would be more of such opportunities.
Is there an example you can give us of something that was a very fruitful and good partnership?
Yeah, I mean, we have been involved, as I said, in three European consortium, where IMI, both funded by...
This is the Innovative Medicines Initiative.
Correct.
Which is a European Union, for those of you who are not from Europe.
Correct. I've been involved in three of such of them from 2010 until basically this year, both on type 1 and type 2 diabetes. And I have experience with a company, for example, with Sanofi, an extremely fruitful interaction where we have been really complementary. There was no really, boundaries in regard to the fact that we were on university side versus, the colleagues in academia, both in terms of synergies technically, but also in terms of what we wanted to achieve. And we publish, a substantial number of papers together. We also have a very fruitful interaction with Lilly in the context of Inodian. Opportunity to exchange, even when this did not materialize into a collaboration, on a specific project. This has been, in my view, very valuable.
Melissa, what's the value to you at Lilly of partnerships?
Well, there's really an extraordinary value as we're trying to look for new opportunities to improve care with new therapies. We all need to understand the biology of disease better. And to do that, it's too big a task for one company alone and often for one laboratory alone, even in academia. And by doing big team science together, tackling the questions about what drives disease and what pathways might be appropriate for targeting to build new therapies, we make much more progress together than we could alone.
Elizabeth, what are partnerships for you? What's the importance of them at Sanofi?
I would entirely agree with what was said before. I think it's key that we collaborate in this kind of partnerships with a focus on what do we do for the patient, how can we improve the life of patients. So that is our focus at Sanofi. And in that regard, I think the collaboration such as IMI Identify is exactly where we have these fruitful collaborations between pharma, if I may say so, and other organizations where we bring the brains together to collaboratively get the next step for patients and for healthcare.
So you have interesting things that people specialize in. So academia is able to talk to policymakers, for instance, better than pharma can, but pharma have a much greater ability to do translational work than perhaps academia does. Would you agree?
I actually think there's very strong and important translational work occurring both in academia and in pharma.
Oh, that's good to hear.
And many of the programs that we've been involved in with IMI, multiple partnerships in Europe, as well as in the Accelerating Medicines Partnerships in the United States between public and private sectors, have been highly focused on translational research, on biomarker research, on genetic research, and opportunities to better understand subsets of disease that may really be a different drivers in those patients. And so, in particular, our work in the IMI projects has been highly translational.
McKinney.
Yeah, what I enjoy especially of the IMI was this pre-competitive spirit, meaning the opportunity for us in academia to sit together with not just a single company focused on a specific, product of a company, of a line they would be interested in, but, the phase that precedes actually the development, let's say, of the product, in a community of companies, meaning an environment where on both sides there will be scientists interested in moving forward the field. And then, of course, that may turn, ideally, it has had implication as far as product. But it was this, conceiving what can be done even before a product can be developed together to get to that point of have something that is especially rewarding.
So it's interesting because I guess a lot of people watching this would not think that actually, they would think that pharma companies were highly territorial, and they wouldn't ever collaborate. But actually that's very far from the truth now. There are all sorts of collaborations that go on. Has that been something that's a relatively recent development, Elizabeth?
I think it has changed during the last, if I may say, 5 to 10 years, I would say, significantly, that it is a more fruitful and more constructive collaboration, because I do believe in the private sector and in academia, you have a lot of scientific, really true scientific basic research. However, the pass forward to translate it then into tangible new drugs, for example, or new pathways for patients, I think that is where the support or the interaction with pharma can be very fruitful to make things available, drugs available, new treatment paradigms shifting. And I think that has significantly changed during the last years.
And the other very significant area of expertise within pharma, of course, is understanding of regulation and what's required in order to get a medicine through regulatory approvals. And I think, again, people who are not familiar with this process may not realize that actually that begins very early on in the life of a medicine. And so actually it's very important that there's involvement and partnership with pharma so that people don't get to a stage and think, oh, my God, I should have done that. a long time ago. Is that the case?
Actually, I do think in pharma we have an end in mind, and that end is to try to build a new therapeutic solution for people living with disease, with diabetes, obesity, other disorders. And so when we're designing experiments and interpreting data and identifying gaps in research, it's with that end in mind. Yeah. So you're absolutely right. Sometimes the order in which you might build experiments or ask questions might change if you're looking toward a very strong publication alone, or if you're looking for the next steps. And it sometimes changes your experimental design and even the way you look at results that emerge from big projects.
But that's really important, because actually, unless you get through the regulatory hurdles, you don't get what might be a fabulous medicine out there to patients. You know, it takes much longer. I wonder whether, because we're talking about partnership here, talking about industry and academia, but is there a case for involving other partners? For instance, the public. I mean, by the public, I mean people living with diabetes. Elizabeth?
I'm not so sure that I understand the question correctly, so maybe you can say it once again.
So is there a case for, yes, there's a partnership between industry and academia, but is there a case for bringing in people with lived experience as well?
Absolutely. I think a recent example of one of our private-public partnerships that has really been exemplary in that regard has been Inodia and Inodia Harvest. Yeah. And so they created an advocacy component with people living with the disease to really guide even protocol development and analysis of the research, but also to help our investigators, either on the pharma side or on the academic side, communicate in a way that was accessible to people living with diabetes. And so it was a very strong patient advocacy committee, or PAC, that brought new questions to our research, but also highlighted needs they were seeing that were unmet that we should be taking into consideration. And that input's important in trial design, important in ethical approaches, but often individuals who are a little further away from your research can ask you the so what question.
Yeah, that's a really important question to ask.
I mean, this is a question that you also get at the patient panels when you discuss new protocols, which we do also at Sanofi, where we ask for input, even active input from patients into new studies to understand their needs and how it translates into clinical practice at the end. So for that, it is really important to hear the patient. And I think that is a key and very fruitful interaction that has definitely improved at many layers how clinical studies are executed in our days.
And actually, having worked with both pharma and academia myself, and public engagement is my particular field, actually, I think it's pharma who know how to do that. So sorry, academics, you're lagging behind a bit there. I think it's pharma who have the skills to be able to do that. So what else do you're narrowing your eyes?
Only because I really have tremendous respect for the way the Inodia partnership.
They are exemplary.
And I see their examples being highlighted in other venues. And so I wouldn't underestimate the importance of perhaps the chemistry of large team science and public-private partnerships and the diversity of perspectives that that really the people living with the disease bring, and then also the way we can communicate our research more effectively to broader communities.
Mm. Yeah, in a way, I mean, you said it's a paradox, because we in academia depend on public funding. On the other hand, pharma has to sell. So that's probably is the culture, the reason for why. But I can say that things are also changing indeed in academia. We're part of a large network in Germany that is involved in, you know, diabetes research. And we are also now recently established advisory panel for patients, exactly because the culture is likely changes
there is the need to communicate much more with the patients. I think that this is a positive development.
Another advantage I think pharma brings to these partnerships is that they sometimes have a better bird's eye view of the whole field than academics do. I mean, that's not always the case, but sometimes people are buried in their own little kind of channel and they don't see the big picture, which I think pharma is very good at doing, at seeing the big picture. But I was wondering for both of you from industry, what do you look for in an academic partnership? Elizabeth first.
From my point of view, I'm looking, into the, I would say, fruitful interaction at the same level, to feedback one to the other about new ideas and how we could move forward. When we are talking about new molecules, to understand better the translational aspect of that. How does it translate into reality? How does it translate also into development path forward? How does it translate then thereafter into the regulatory approval pathway? What do we need to do? And on the other hand, also the feedback that I really very much appreciate from the interaction is sometimes at pharma, you need also somebody who tells you this is not very useful for patient or for the health system. We need this. And this feedback is sometimes very helpful that we get even more from these interactions.
Melissa, what do you look for?
Well, I think there are different types of partnerships. Yeah. But as we're talking about the large public-private partnerships, I really appreciated that we were all scientists and physicians together trying to solve problems rather than a label on a forehead of where you are coming from, because most of these scientists and physicians and translational biologists have had many similar professional journeys. Mm-hmm. And they may be currently trying to solve problems in disease from one seat versus another. But when you're able to go past those labels and work together on the science and the medicine and ask the questions, those are fantastic collaborations. And then I'll just say to your question about bird's eye view versus deep in detail, the IMI projects have been outstanding in building much bigger goals with smaller subteams. And by doing that, even if scientists in a large team are working on a particular task and very focused, like they might be in their own laboratories, they're working in those teams together toward bigger goals, which means the big picture view is discussed often. And the other aspects of the research in the big team is communicated and viewed. And I do think that changes the trajectories of even the smaller, more focused experiments.
Can I come to you, Fanny McKaylee, about public perception of industry-academia partnerships? It's always been difficult. How do you have those partnerships, make them transparent, and make that, and help the public understand that they are enormously beneficial?
Well, I mean, it's only teaching by examples. I mean, I think, like Melissa was mentioning about Inodia, and indeed the trajectory that an initiative like this has had, moving from, some very basic question to the possibility to bring now clinical trials that address, the very needs of not only the patient with type 1 diabetes, but those who do not have yet the disease are at high risk of developing. And of course, I mean, we have to make people more aware of the mechanism behind this funding mechanism. There's extremely transparent monitor by the authorities. There is no, reason, I mean, I think, for the public to fear that there is any, selfish interest
beyond, you know, really moving forward with the science.
Well, thank you all. I mean, these public-private partnerships are so important. They're so important for patients, and they're so important as a way of working together. And I'm delighted at last to have industry in EASD-TV because we rely on these partnerships with you so much. Thank you very much to my sofa dwellers on this particular section, and I'm looking forward to talking to you again in a moment.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. We hope you enjoyed today's insights. If you did, go ahead and hit subscribe, and you'll always stay up to date with the latest in diabetes research and discoveries. And if you'd like to dive deeper, you can find plenty more information at easd.org.